Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we are covering Looney Tunes Back in Action, in honor to celebrate Space Jam. In our previous back catalog, we did Space Jam years ago. So if you want to listen to that, I'm re-releasing it this week as well, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we want to thank all of you for listening and subscribing. If you want extra content, feel free to join our Patreon, patreon.com/myopia. In the meantime, if you want to hear me riff this movie, we did it on Cineprov, patreon.com/cineprov. Thanks for all you do, guys. Thanks for sharing us. I don't know if you follow our Facebook group, but this week we were in the top 200 podcasts, and that's all thanks to you. So if you're interested, or you have someone else who likes movie and TV podcasts, TV and film podcasts, please send this to them, because we appreciate what you do. Thanks, guys. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, in honor of Space Jam coming out, and by the way, if you want to, I have released, again, our third episode on Space Jam, the original. We're doing Looney Tunes Back in Action, a movie which should never have been, although, Brendan Fraser. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood, or Myopia Movies, or whatever we're calling it this week. And Riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we have...
Jeanette.
Hello, this is Daniel, a frequent contributor to Popdos, and I don't really have a joke for this. We'll get to why later.
So this week we are riffing on, God help us, Looney Tunes Back in Action.
Directed by Gremlins director Joe Dante.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Joe Dante has a... I don't know. I mean, maybe this is me. We'll get to the end, but he definitely understands how to deal with CG in a way better than the previous Space Jam movie.
Well, Joe Dante was a huge fan of Looney Tunes. You can
clearly
tell.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I said was. He is still with us as of this recording, but he was apparently pissed off with how Space Jam portrayed the characters. So he wanted to make this movie, and after Space Jam, the Looney Tunes were popular again, so he pitched it, he made it, and then everything just went wrong.
I mean, you gotta give Space Jam some credit at the time, besides Who Framed Roger Rabbit, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of this type of animation was there, yeah. And there was a whole lot of development issues with Space Jam, like
right.
The people who did the animation, it's like, oh no, the fuck, we can't do this.
I'll say this about Space Jam. It made the Looney Tunes sympathetic. It made me care about them. This, it's just like, okay, Daffy gets fired. Why should I care?
Well, and Space Jam was the first thing they had done in decades because, well, in the 80s and 90s, if I recall, what they would do is repackage old comics under a, like, mantle. Like, there was Quackbusters.
Yep.
There was Daffy Duck's, like,
Fantasy Island
yeah.
With Speedy Gonzales is what's his name? The assistant?
Right, instead of Tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Instead of Tattoo, it was Speedy Gonzales.
Yeah, and then the whole idea was that they would play old shorts.
Right.
So Space Jam was the first new thing in forever. And it was the first new thing, if I recall, after Mel Blanc died. And so, literally a decade later, because I think that's 93 and this is 2003.
Space Jam was 96.
This is 7 years later.
The last thing he did, well, he was alive, that makes no sense. But the last thing he did was Roger Rabbit. So that whole scene with him and Mickey Mouse.
Which is the
80s? It was 88, 89, I think.
Yes, besides, it is. Besides, I actually didn't mention this. And then just back to action, but until Who Framed Roger Rabbit, that was the first time that, I guess, studios crossed like that. Sometimes.
Yeah, and that required, Spielberg to be the producer and,
yeah,
like, pull them together. And Who Framed Roger Rabbit is great. It's an all-timer. I love that movie.
Well, I mean, before Space Jam, there have been a couple, like, TV specials that had Bugs Bunny and the like in it. One of them was that anti-drug thing with Bugs Bunny and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and...
Oh, dude, that is a stay tuned. If we ever do, like, cartoon TV shows again...
I read Nathan Rabin's article on it, and no, I never want to see that.
Are you telling the people who were coked up doing drugs, making this animation, wanted to hear about to do drugs?
Exactly.
Apparently. Oh, true story about that. It was apparently distributed on VHS and McDonald's, and the VHS included an intro with... the then President George H.W. Bush and his wife Barbara.
Yeah, and it was one of those, like, and again, I'm old enough to remember this, but like Back to the Future, there was a handful of movies you could get directly from. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to ask this question. I know what a VHS is, but what does VHS stand for?
Video home something.
All right, I'll look it up. Studio?
Maybe.
Stent?
System.
Stent?
Stereo.
Stereo.
I am looking this up for the sake of Nora here. Okay, it came out in 1976.
Really?
Yeah, but then, oh no, like watch old commercials. It was like $700 back then, so it's like $2,000 today to get a VHS player.
Plus VCRs looked like pianos back then, so if you wanted to press play, it was like, darn.
Yep. It was like a chunk.
It was. It stood for a video home system.
Yeah,
there we go.
And then it was competitive with Betamax, which is apparently the better system. And so until like 2000, Betamax tape for the ones that they used to record on. And if you're in a studio system, like when they said like straight to video, like they
Betamax had better visual quality, but it couldn't hold as much as VHS could.
Correct. Anyway.
Streaming. Unless you lived in Oregon. Yeah, Blockbuster.
The one.
The fucking service out there.
That's apparently a brewery also now. They have their own
Blockbuster beer.
They apparently do.
So. It just tastes like old carpets.
It does.
And smells like BO. Yeah.
You know what? I'm just going to come out and say it. Fuck Blockbuster. You deserve to.
You say that on every single podcast.
Why do you say fuck Blockbuster? Because I don't hear this.
They suck.
Because
they didn't have a good selection. The staff really wasn't knowledgeable. And, I mean, what more do you need? They had like fucking 20 copies of Charlie's Angels. And but if you went and asked them for a David Cronenberg movie, they'd be like, you got a late fee.
First of all, I don't know if you've seen Charlie's Angels recently.
The 2018 one or the...
No, I haven't seen the 2018.
The 19...
I'm talking about the 2001, yes.
With Cameron Diaz, Lucy Liu, Drew Barrymore,
yeah.
Bill Murray,
and yeah.
Sam Rockwell and... Oh, so yeah, Sam Rockwell. Yeah, you need 20 copies of that. Okay.
I mean, I need 20 copies of it. Stay tuned, I guess.
Blockbuster. Looney Tunes. Back in action.
Speaking of which, Tales.
Dusty Tales.
Blockbuster and a shit selection of Looney Tunes as well. So there we go.
I mean, you got the name Blockbuster. I mean, at the time, I mean, people. Demand, supply and demand. That's all I can say. Yeah.
Right. So, smash cut. Daffy Duck is getting fired.
No, well, smash cut, it first opens up with that one cartoon about rabbit season and duck season. It's a recreation of it.
Yeah.
There's no credits at the beginning. It's just Looney Tunes back in action. Then we smash cut to a recreation of the rabbit season, duck season cartoon.
Classic. And then which turns into a board meeting. Where Meg mentioned Daffy Duck gets fired.
He's getting fired hard.
By the Warner Brothers.
Yes.
And the Warner
sister.
Why aren't the Animaniacs in this movie?
I was kind of half expecting them to.
Because they show the water tower in this movie on the Warner Brothers lot.
And Brendan Fraser accidentally crashes it in a Tim Burton-esque joke, which is 17 years too late.
Well, was that Tim Burton's Bat? I think it was.
It was Tim Burton's Batmobile.
Yes, it was.
But after both Schumacher movies and what year did Batman Begins come out?
It didn't come out before this. It was 2005.
Yeah. But they must have been filming it in 2003 when this came out.
I think they just had the property and needed to use it. Just shoved it in there.
Right. A couple of things we have to set up at this point. Their biggest star at the time is a guy named Damian Drake, who's a Bond guy.
Timothy Dalton.
Who's Tim Dalton showing up in this for precisely... God, he shows up at the end, but like the man got a paycheck for being on a movie poster for 70% of this movie, which, I mean, good for him.
Yeah, I was about to say. Which also, though, kind of makes sense with what you were saying about the Batmobile. I mean... Tim Dalton had been Bond in the 80s. The Batmobile design that they're copying was from the 80s. When was the script written?
Who knows? Because, like, even Hot Fuzz, where he gets kind of a comeback, is 2007?
Yeah.
Like, 4 years after this? Like, and again, I have nothing against Tim Dalton. I kind of love him as this spy type, gruff type, and everything is coming afterwards. But no, this is an old joke. This is a very old joke.
Wasn't he only in two? Only?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, at this point, too, Pierce was also burned out. Like, this was the nether region. I think 2002 was Die Another Day.
Yep.
And that had been a huge flop, and we're still half decade away from Daniel Craig doing Casino Royale.
Casino Royale was 2006, so yeah, about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. And that's kind of the biggest issue with this movie, in that it feels like it wants to be like a Zucker Abrams Zucker parody of something.
It tries.
But the timing is off for every single one of these jokes.
Well, this movie was supposed to revitalize, like, because it was supposed to have sequels and some shit, because, you know, they wanted the same magic that Space Jam had. But
it bombed.
It missed the mark.
It bombed horribly. This movie did. I mean, here's what they were trying to do in terms of this movie. They were marketing it to kids, right? Because I remember the trailers for this that were all on, like, Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon and shit. Like, in that boardroom scene, Bugs Bunny walks in as Daffy's chewing them out, saying, I can't keep being the victim. I'm the real star here. And Bugs walks in, they all love him, and he's like, oh, hello, Chuck. Hello, Mel. It's nice to see you again. I'm like, okay, I get the joke, but what kid's going to get that joke?
Well, so what's the purpose of the joke? Like, that's the other thing, too. Like, a lot of these things are...
What's the point of Lethal Weapon babies? I mean, the last Lethal Weapon movie had come out in, like, 98.
We need to have a Lethal Weapon for kids.
But that's why this movie stinks of 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
I will also say this movie looks good because it's shot by Dean Cundey again. I don't know how he gets roped into such nonsense.
Who's he?
Dean Cundey's been in 1,000 things, but he's a cinematographer for, like, Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's been working since the 70s, and he's incredible. The original Halloween movie.
The guy who shot this movie is the guy who shot the original Halloween?
And The Thing. And Halloween 3, and Back to the Future.
Oh, God.
And 2 and 3. Also Jurassic Park, and previous episodes, The Flintstones and Casper, and Apollo 13. Dean Cundey, like, that's why the movie looks good. It just, there's no point to it.
I mean, we talk about the opening boardroom scene already, and Daffy gets fired by the Warner Brothers, and then we meet Brendan Fraser, who's a wannabe stunt man, but he's working as a security guard in the lock.
Just funny because he does all his stunts.
Next to Dick Miller, by the way, who, if you're a Joe Dante fan, you recognize him. He was the neighbor in Gremlins.
The guy who was convinced that they were destroying, and he only buys American vehicles.
He was in all of Joe Dante's movies up until, I think he died a couple years ago.
Yes, 2016, I think.
Something like that. I mean, unfortunately, he's no longer with us, which is a shame, because he's one of the best, funniest parts of this movie.
Well, and Brendan Fraser here has the line that he's a stuntman, he's auditioning for another movie at this point, and causes a, like, I don't know, Porky Pig-esque mess, where a real human... And the wrestler character from the Bugs Bunny cartoons is the co-auditioner. And he walks out and it is a little bit later, but he has a line to Jenna Elfman, Dharma from Dharma and Greg. Look, man, I was on screen in The Mummy more than Brendan Fraser was, which gave me a legitimate laugh. That's funny.
There are a few legitimate laughs in this movie. One of them is that, and then Brendan Fraser's like, no, I do my own stunts, but... Another one was Shaggy chewing out Matthew Lillard in the cafeteria.
You played me too much like a stoner. Oh, yeah. Boy, it is, which is good.
I'll do better next time. You better do better next time, or I'm going to hunt you down, man.
Zoinks, you got to play me more like a real human being. He is better than Scoob. Lillard, let Lillard do it. Lillard is great.
Also, Roger Corman is in this movie.
He is.
I wasn't about to say for some reasons because that's how Joe Dante got his start, but he is the director. Jenna Elfman tasks Brendan Fraser with kicking Daffy out of the studio.
Right.
And Daffy decides he just wants to run all around. And in doing so, it's kind of like a Blazing Saddles, Pee-wee's Big Adventure thing where they go through some film sets, one of which is filming the new Batman movie, and Roger Corman's apparently directing it.
You think it could have been like a spoof, or just like, hey, this is coming up next, or whatever?
No, it was definitely a callback to Blazing Saddles.
Also better than Schumacher's second Batman movie.
That's true.
And his first one, let's be honest.
What did Schumacher direct besides Batman?
Lost Boys.
He did Lost Boys. Do you remember that movie adaptation of Phantom of the Opera?
Little Gerard Butler?
Yeah. He did that.
Okay, that was
good. What was the one where doctors were killing themselves and being resurrected?
I think you just made that up.
No.
It's a crazy movie.
He also did this one movie called Phone Booth with Colin Farrell in it.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Damn.
He also directed the pilot for that Game of Thrones, House of Cards Netflix show.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I mean, I like him as a director, RIP, he passed away. And by the way, the movie I was talking about was called Flatliners. Flatliners is where med students have near-death experience by nearly killing themselves and the other doctors resurrect themselves, yes.
The only other thing I can think of that he did that was good was Falling Down.
Falling Down is fine. 8mm, I like.
Basically Falling Down.
Yeah, the Michael Douglas movie where he's just this crazy, crazy white person who wants to just shoot everyone who's ever inconvenienced him.
Yeah, Nick Cage, Jane Gandolfini, and Joaquin Phoenix in 8mm. He directed that one, too. I don't know. Joel Schumacher has a very cartoony style, like over the top, and you either like it or you don't, but I think he's fine, man.
Going back before that, he's the guy who directed St. Elmo's Fire.
He was.
He didn't direct this, though, which is good, because I can only imagine how Bugs Bunny with nipples would have looked.
But do you think it would have been a better movie if he did direct it, just based on his cartoonish?
No, we need a cartoon director. I don't know, like... Dante makes sense. That's the problem.
Yeah, but this is the best he could come up with. Some sort of a dumb spy plot.
I wonder if it's not that Bugs Bunny and such are too tied down by their characters and Warner Brothers wouldn't let him do anything more crazy.
Well, like, that's a part of the problem, though. For example, the whole thing is that Brendan Fraser's spy father, Tim Dalton, is kidnapped and tasks his son with finding the blue monkey, which is some sort of a diamond, right?
Correct.
That I believe
turns people into monkeys.
Yeah, and turns them back. That's the most important part.
Right. Capuchin monkeys, by the way, not monkeys that could actually do manual labor, which is what apparently the main plan was.
That's true. Yeah, you want so act. Acme?
Acme? Yes, Acme.
Acme is the antagonist of this, which is led by Steve Martin, which henchman is Goldberg, the wrestler from WWF?
E. Then F, then E.
Then E, then the pandas.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is them trying to find this diamond, and Brendan Fraser gets home and Daffy snuck along and broke into his house, they find that projector with him beating up people, him being Tim Dalton. I mean, it's like, okay, get to Vegas.
We can slow down just a sec. Daffy Duck gets fired after that board meeting where it turns out no one likes him. And upon his escape, he's supposed to be escorted out by goons, but he escapes. And he ends up in that Batman car.
Goons?
Hired goons.
Hired goons?
And he jumps the Batmobile, which Brendan Fraser grabs him out of, which then crashes into the Animaniacs, like, water tower.
That completely soaks Jenna Elfman.
And Bugs Bunny, who's in the co-pilot seat, right? The passenger seat, the shotgun seat. And that's what get both Brendan Fraser fired and Daffy, who's already been fired, kicked off the lot by some goo.
Can we talk about Brendan Fraser for a second?
Of course, sure.
Like, he had some shit happen to him, like, actual real.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Because I watched Doom Patrol, which is a show that's on HBO Max.
Oh, he's a robot man,
he's
right?
He's a robot man, and so it's just his voice. I think sometimes he might actually physically hide. But after the third Mummy movie, I don't know if y'all know this, like, he had some severe, like, injuries that caused him to, like, surgeries kind of thing, going through a hell of a divorce, like, seeing him, like, shriveled and cut, and this is kind of good to see him. He's good now because he's, you know, doing stuff now.
I heard he was sexually assaulted at one point.
During the Hollywood scandals and shit, you know, where, like, producers and stuff, the whole Harvey Weinstein, he was one of the male people along with Terry Crews and went forward, but I think Hollywood kind of blacklisted for him. At the same time, his wife was divorcing him, like, $400,000 a month in alimony and stuff. So, the fact that Brendan Fraser right now...
I'm just happy to see him on screen,
that's
man. Yeah. I like the dude.
Yeah, I really
do. It's impossible to hate Brendan Fraser.
Oh, yeah.
He's, like you were saying, he's been through some shit.
Some shit.
And he's good at this. Like, the problem... And that's why, like... I mean, we all make mistakes. I mean, I do a podcast. But he's just a funny guy. And he has a natural... like, simple charm to him. Like, he doesn't have to try. He just got that smiley charm to him.
Well, he sure didn't make a mistake. He agreed to co-star with Jenna Elfman.
Dude, Dharma in this movie is, like, acting against a plank of wood and whatever. Like, I don't know why she got cast in this. Maybe Dharma and Greg. Maybe a producer like Dharma and Greg. But, man, she is just a plank of wood in this movie.
Well, the Looney Tunes back in action didn't destroy his career, Brendan Fraser.
No.
After this was Crash.
The movie. Oh, boy.
And then Journey to the End of the Night.
Oh,
the Center of the Earth.
Yeah, I thought he was in Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Well, he did. I got Journey to the End of the Night was 2006. Journey to the Center of the Earth was 2008. In the other movie, he was the G.I. Joe movie.
He was, Steven's, the Mummy director's name, Steven Summers. That G.I. Joe was one of his, so.
Right. Oh, and there was Furry Vengeance, which I guess kind of...
That would have derailed him.
Yeah.
Anyway, though, like, here's one of the weird things about this movie. Do the Looney Tunes know each other? Do they have a history with each other? Were they all co-stars once and now they're drifting apart? The reason I bring that up is because when Brendan Fraser and Daffy get to Vegas, they apparently are going to Yosemite Sam's casino. And I have no idea if they even know who Yosemite Sam is, which Daffy should.
Yeah.
I mean, are they co-stars in this universe? Is Yosemite Sam just some sort of oil tycoon who got rich enough to open a Vegas casino?
Well, not to spoil the ending, but I think it's the meta part into it. It's the movie within the movie. So they could not know each other. This could all be as great. It's a scene within a scene.
Oh, boy. That, you know what? No, that doesn't work.
It doesn't work for you? No. But no, but I guess since we went to Vegas, well, they go to Vegas by Brendan Fraser's pizza delivery car, which is from back in the day, which is then found, which in his garage when he pulled out, then whips out a spy car, which is Timothy Dalton's car, which is the car that Daffy Duck wanted to ride to Vegas.
Which Bugs Bunny and Jenna Elfman get later.
Right.
Yeah, so they're in an old gremlin. Right, like,
is that what it is?
The MC Gremlin.
The yellow car he's in?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I just made my last payment.
Right, and like, so he comes home, and also we have to emphasize here that they're just Looney Tunes living around, like his neighbor is Granny with Tweety Bird and Sylvester, which show up later.
And then there's that whole scene in the Hollywood cafeteria that we alluded to, where Matthew Lillard's with Shaggy, and Shaggy's chewing them out, and then Speedy Gonzales and Porky Pig are there, and they're both whining about how hard it is to be politically correct, and I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, and Porky Pig goes, I had to lose the stutter, and then people said I stopped being funny because of, like, it was not PC, and Speeding Gal says, you're telling me, and then they cut.
Was that a thing with Porky the Pig, being people with speech impediments?
I mean, maybe, but Speedy Gonzales doesn't appear in Space Jam for a reason.
Oh, yeah.
Even though my understanding is he's Speedy Gonzales is quite popular in South America.
I mean, it's possible. I'm guessing there's a reason he didn't appear in Space Jam. And he probably, him and...
Pepe
Le Pew, thank you.
No, Pepe Le Pew was in...
He's not going to be in the next
one. He's not going to be the next one, but he was in the first one.
Like, briefly in the first one.
For one joke, where he farts in everyone's face and then kisses the ball into the goal. Into the hoop.
Yep, he scored a point. He was in the game.
He was. He
contributed.
He was.
He helped the Monstars in their defeat.
And the only joke we have so far from the new one, without us seeing it so far, you know, stay tuned, is Granny has alcoholism. She's taking a this is the one gag. She has a martini at halftime.
That might be the most offensive thing, the most boundary pushing thing this new Space Jam movie is.
Well, watching. I mean, as we've been told from incels, they took away Lola Bunny's tits, so who else knows what's coming?
Which, by the way, I know we're not getting into that, but like, some weird people into Lola Bunny. Like,
it's weird.
I mean, like, I've seen people dress up for Halloween costumes, but people were fucking pissed when
it was a weird turn for a kids movie.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of weird terms for a kids movie, the Acme Corporation exists in this movie.
Like in Last Action Hero.
Right, and Steve Martin apparently runs it, and he's apparently Inspector Clouseau's gay child.
With the bowl cut.
Yeah.
Horrible bowl cut.
Capri pants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and this is one amusing joke. That woman that he hits on, like Mary, secretary, that's Mary Warnoff, which is great. She's an indie film actress who was in all of Paul Bartel's movies, Eating Raoul.
Sure, sure.
One of the board members of Acme, Ron Perlman.
Yes,
Ron Perlman. And the bald doctor from Deep Space Nine.
Robert Picardo?
Yes.
There we go.
Although, this is what reveals this movie to be what it is, quite honestly, is that if you're in a movie and you ever refer to the protagonist as the good guys, you're in a shit movie, which is exactly what Steve Martin does here.
It's so on the nose. It's rough. The movie has very little, how do I put this, depth to it. It's funny for a, like, because the whole thing about Looney Tunes, at least to me, is that they're making fun of Disney and like they're kind of a parody, kind of the darker, more adult version of cartoons. And this movie feels very safe. It's weird.
Yeah.
Well,
because none of the humor's contemporary. I mean, like, never once does Bugs Bunny mock W.
Among other things, like, it also could make fun of the more recent cartoon violence. Like, this is 2003. They could have had a South Park bit. Right, because South Park at that point was almost a decade old too. Like,
true.
Oh, I would have loved to see Bugs Bunny and Eric Cartman like talking to each other.
Or I mean, just
that'd have been terrible.
Or have Elmer Fudd with a hood up like he's Kenny. Something.
Yeah.
But regardless, I mean, like, the move in this movie is very straightforward. Once they have the spy car, they have to go to Vegas to try to find the clues to get the blue monkey.
Well, they have to meet up with Dusty Tails is what they're doing, which is Heather Locklear, which, by the way, a great porn name in both cases.
That's right.
Okay.
And
she's a spy?
Yes, apparently.
She is some sort of connection agent to Tim Dalton, who has been captured at this point by Acme president Steve Martin, right? And so they go to this weird casino to try to, for Brendan Fraser to kind of hook up. And Yosemite Sam has been reached out to by Acme to try to capture them.
It's Yosemite Sam's casino, so his face is like all over the place.
Right.
Plus, apparently, like the shows are all country music themed, and Foghorn Leghorn is both the MC and one of the blackjack dealers.
Yep. Right. Yep. Yep.
And then they. I think that was, if I remember, that's a very sexual dance number that she did for a kids movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Very. When I first saw it, I thought it was Britney Spears because, you know, I just watched the pre-Britney.
I also thought it was Jenna Elfman for half a second because they don't establish anyone in this movie.
I thought that was Britney Spears
for a second, yeah. And then she does her little dance number. They go back. She reveals herself and gives her a Queen of Diamonds card.
Right. It's Queen of Diamonds card with a realistic face on it. Yeah, I mean, it looks like from the opening of the Casino Royale with the credits, it looks like when the sniper rifle goes over the Queen of Hearts and then Vesper's face shows up briefly.
Right.
That's what this is.
Okay. No.
But by the way, check out our episode on Casino Royale on Mission Briefing
before the new one comes out.
Whenever it comes out, they've delayed that shit for like fucking 3 years.
It feels that way.
He's been Bond for like 7 years longer than he wanted to be. So
that's not the longest Bond.
He is now the longest lasting Bond. He doesn't have the most movies, but he has been Bond for the longest.
I got you.
I don't think you want to do. The man feels like he's broken. Like
no.
After every single one for the last three, at least he's been like, I'm done. Like it's too hard on everything because it's a very physical role, which I get.
He's getting old. See, he is old. He's...
Well, and then that's the thing about like the old Roger Moore movies where he kind of does a kung fu chop and then takes a nap for 3 hours.
I can see that.
In terms of this movie, I mean, it's a spy movie, so they meet up with Dusty Tails, and then she puts on the Emma Peel one piece leather outfit.
Right.
Because why not? And then we get a car chase after that between Elfman and Fraser and Yosemite Sam.
Hold up. You're forgetting whose car they used.
Right.
It was Kyle Petty's, right?
Jeff Gordon.
Jeff Gordon.
Big old 24.
All right. There you
Which
go.
Which was in his like fire jacket.
Right. He's in, like suited up.
I'm commandeering this here vehicle.
And then somehow within the chase within the Vegas Strip, the spy car turns into a spy jet.
Well, it's because they're about to get captured, and then Daffy goes, Mother. And so the spy car is like, taking you to Mother. And
which is just goes. Something.
Yeah.
Another Avengers reference, but hey.
And then we end up with, it's not Judy Greer, but I thought it was Judy Greer for a long time.
Oh my God. Cusack, what's her name? Jenna?
Joan
Cusack shows up in this weird getup. Like, and yeah, she's supposed to be Q or Mother from the Avengers, you know, like but Robert Downey Jr.
Before we get to that, the flying car crashes in the middle of the desert. And first, what we get is a scene where they think they're going to die of thirst, but then a Walmart supercenter just happens to be in the middle of the desert.
Capitalism.
Yeah. What is that spoofing, though? They never say anything about it.
I think this is product placement.
It is, but they want it to be a Wayne's World-esque joke, and there's no joke. There's no punchline.
Walmart just shows up. The other thing was Mirage.
Oh, also, Acme's got a whole bunch of operatives that are trying to stop Daffy and Bugs. And in the desert, they call upon their one operative, whom I'm sure you're going to recognize. It's some sort of coyote, a wily coyote, if you will.
Mm. Dude, and his bad guy performance is, I guess, fine, but it just keeps coming back over and over. It should be one joke.
They also forgot Wile E. Coyote can talk.
He can.
Although he can?
The signs are fine. I think the signs are fine for the joke. It needs to happen once, and he keeps coming back, and it's a lot. I this movie feels sloppy, and it's unusual for Joe Dante, but it does feel like a mess. Right?
Yeah, it's a mess in more ways than one, but after all those scenes in the desert, that's when we get to Area 52 with Joan Cusack as the mother the spy car was taking them to.
Also, what was the... y'all gonna kill me for not knowing what the robot was. What was her henchman? It was from...
Robbie?
From Lost in Space?
Yeah, Robbie the Robot.
Robbie the Robot.
All right, all right. I think that was kind of cool and nostalgic.
That was a funny joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just walking around with some... just gizmo and gadgets.
I will say, though, I wish they had done more with that, if only, like, they're Warner Brothers. There's a lot of nonsense stuff you could call up being Warner Brothers.
It's Area 52, and they do bring up a bunch of nonsense shit to the forefront during this scene. There's the...
Marvin the Martian is in one tube.
The robot monster from Robot Monster, that's the ape with the diving helmet on.
Right.
That they're a fiend without a face, the disembodied brain that's like... scooching around by its spinal cord, and then
so these were all actual movie,
old monster movies from like the 40s and 50s.
The one I realized was the robot,
and then this is where we get the fucking Daleks because they need to be in this movie for some reason.
And they said in the 80s made the Doctor Who movie.
That's true. Oh, okay. I forgot about that. He was in it. The little Doctor Who robot was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are not robots. We are simply driving a tank. I have explained.
And that's the good, like...
That's the same. That's
it's fine.
Bugs Bunny. But who did Bugs Bunny put popcorn into and he made popcorn? So it's the...
I don't know.
One of the aliens with a, like, a helmet.
It's the one with the gray face that I don't know what that one is.
Day of the Earth still. It's any number of 1,000 movies from the 50s. Marvin the Martian also escapes at this point to set up future shit.
Also, one of the... monsters from this island Earth is in the tubes. The one with the big bug eyes and the big brain. But good lord, they go to try and escape from this big security breach, I guess, where Joan Cusack is kicking everyone else out, and so Fraser and Elfman manage to escape.
Unfortunately, they were not conquered for the Dalek Empire.
And then, we get a scene with Steve Martin chewing out Wile E. Coyote.
In a very lovable way. Because he tells him to I can see where... I felt like they didn't cut any of Steve Martin's, like, dialogue or scenes, whatever. Because usually things are... But so I think they just wanted more and more of him. Because I guess he was the only over-the-top person. So
and he's... Steve Martin. I think at this point you don't cut him.
No,
right?
No.
It's probably in his contract somewhere. I should clarify, these are kind of happening simultaneously. So we cut back to the Acme boardroom, and then we cut back to Area 52 where Peter Graves explains what the blue monkey is on film to Fraser and Elfman. And then we cut back to Steve Martin chewing out Wile E. Coyote, and then reaching out to Marvin the Martian, and then we cut back to Area 52, and it's
this
whole thing.
All over the place, ain't it? Goes here and there.
Yeah, I mean, good lord. I know I told Nick this story before we recorded. I'll say it again with the whole thing about the Daleks. When this was before the Doctor Who revival came out.
Right.
And initially they, wanted to include them because they're the, main villains.
OG monsters, yeah.
Right. But the estate of the guy who created them said, no, we're not going to include you in the revival. We don't want to work with you.
Okay.
We don't want to work with you. And the reason being is, because you used our character in Looney Tunes Back in Action, and that destroyed our brand.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
They eventually made a deal where it all worked out, but at first they said no. They were quite mad about Daleks being in this movie.
It's so weird, though. Like, first of all, stick it up your ass. Like, the Daleks are stupid, and they matter in Doctor Who because it fits into a certain world. But outside that world, it's very cartoony. Like, I'm fine with the Daleks here.
We are not stupid. We are the superior species.
Yeah, but that works in a sci-fi fantasy movie. Like, if they had showed up in Galaxy Quest or something, like, you'd buy it because it's just as silly. Now, you buy that they're scary because if David Tennant tells you they're scary, you believe they're scary because he can emote, but in a comedy movie, I mean, come on, man, they're stupid. I'm sorry.
You're not wrong.
And especially these Daleks, which do not look like the more modern Daleks. where they're painted like a pastel color. And they're very round and they look like traffic cones, which I'm sure is what they were in the 60s. They were just traffic cones with shit stuck to them.
It is the glorious color of the Dalek Empire. You shall surrender.
Yeah, this most terrifying color, baby blue, or whatever they were painted in this movie.
Yeah, it's, no, that is what they look like.
I need to watch old Doctor Who.
No, you don't. You're fine starting with Chris Eccleston.
Yeah, you kind of. Yeah.
Kind of.
I mean, it starts in 1964 where they don't know what color or humor
it is. It literally premiered the same day Kennedy was killed.
Oh, that's a good premiere.
Coincidence? I think not.
That's right. I was the Dalek on the grassy knoll.
I was the second gunman. I was there with the babushka lady.
It's good.
God, where does this movie go after the desert scene?
Well, after the desert scene...
First of all, Abraham Zapruder was a Cybermen.
Yeah, exactly. They escape Area 52 and then they go to Paris to see the Mona Lisa at the Louvre because apparently that
the
Queen
card.
Playing card was some sort of clue about where the blue monkey was located.
Did I fall asleep in this scene?
No, it happens for half a second. It takes them 9 hours to get here and then they're there for 10 minutes.
Oh, that's it. Oh, because it's like, oh, how are you with the Paris? And they're like, they
which
dropped.
There's a whole bunch of scenes where Elmer Fudd's chasing them through paintings. That aren't in the fucking Louvre.
No.
At the time?
No,
ever. Ever? Okay.
Well, and I will say, too, if this was a old school Looney Tune bit, it's very funny. It just doesn't belong in a movie. It feels like they were stretching to make it feature length.
You know what? Frankly, at this point, Bugs and Daffy don't matter to this movie. They're just kind of there.
And Bugs especially, who's not in two-thirds of this movie.
Right.
This is the Daffy movie, which is fine, but why? Like, none of this movie equals why.
Well, I mean, the playing card has some sort of lens on the...
Right.
That they have to peel off the back, and
right.
They hold it up to the Mona Lisa, and apparently has a... and I have no idea how Da Vinci knew where the blue monkey was, but apparently there's a secret map to Africa in the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, Hudson Hawk nonsense for about 10 minutes.
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence. I was about to say, very Nicolas Cage vibes to this movie at the end.
It is. 100%. I don't know, man. This movie just goes on and on. Like, they end up in the Legends of the Hidden Temple for a bit. And this is where everyone lines back up, including gunman assassin types. And, God, this movie's exhausting.
This track. Well, there's this whole thing where apparently someone takes a touristic picture of the map, but Daffy thinks it's a picture of him, so he's like jumping up in front of the camera, so he ruins the picture for Acme.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, after the Mona Lisa scene, Bugs Bunny ends up in a pointillism picture, and...
A picture that's never been in the Louvre. It's in Chicago. It's Sunday afternoon at Le Grand Jet.
That's right, and... Elmer Fudd disintegrates because he's made out of points. Whatever. Yeah.
And then Elfman is kidnapped and taken to the Eiffel Tower, and Bashful Buzzard is there somehow.
Oh, I definitely fell asleep during this part. I thought it was for a quick second.
Oh, no, I don't want you to fall asleep. No.
And then once in Africa, Granny, Sylvester, and Tweety show back up and escort them to a jungle temple.
Oh,
before
so
that,
thought it was them.
Before that, Acme decides to... reveal another agent who's the Tasmanian devil, and he eats Ron Perlman.
He does.
Like, a board member.
Seriously, we get a scene of Ron Perlman saying, you know what, fuck the Tasmanian devil. The Tasmanian devil eats all of his flesh, and then we cut back to his skeleton going, I withdraw my objection. Fucking hell, that's apparently just the movie that we're dealing with
this
here.
This is before, this is after. No, this is, when was Hellboy out?
Before this.
Hellboy was 2004, so the year after.
The next year this. Wow.
Jeez. Okay, get that shot, man.
Yeah, I mean, after this, like, Marvin the Martian is sent, and he tries to stop them at the Blue Monkey, and there's like, ugh.
Nah, I think once they get the Blue Monkey, it turns out that Granny, Tweety, and
Sylvester
are actually Goldberg, Steve Martin's character. And the Tasmanian devil.
Well, during that whole reveal scene, Granny is Steve Martin, Tweety is the Tasmanian devil, and then Martin tries to fool everyone by unzipping his disguise again and saying that he's Tim Dalton. And then he unzips his disguise again and he's Michael Jordan.
Which, wait, have a second. I think, which is a cut. I don't think they really got Mike to actually do this.
I think it was reused footage from Space Jam.
Because at the time, he had unreattired and he was playing for the Washington Wizards. Uh-huh. And but he's, like Nick said, I think earlier when we talked, he probably still got a shit ton of money just for his likeness. In this
probably.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't have the Hitler mustache. Though they do make the joke that he's like a foot taller than Steve Martin. So he unzips a taller buddy.
Oh, man.
And then they unzip him again. He's shorter again, which is a fine joke.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Michael Jordan is obviously a very tall dude. But obviously, you know, Granny turns out to be Steve Martin. And he teleports them all back to the Acme HQ.
With the blue monkey.
Yep.
But they fucked up. The one part that I did laugh about this whole movie is when they fucked up a teleportation where, you know, they all have different body parts from each other. He's like, I thought we fixed that. And just presses the button again and they all revert to normal.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And then we go into the classic henchman tying Timmy T. Dalton to the railroads and scene, which I guess is... Is that a classic Looney Tunes thing where they tie it to the railroad, or is that more...
Well, it's a spoof of, like, early silent movies with the damsel in distress.
It's also very Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah. Well, there's...
What do they do right?
There's another part of this, which is apparently Acme wants to put Blue Monkey in some satellite and beam its power all across the Earth, so...
Turning people into monkeys so they can make the Acme products and then turn them back to humans so they can buy the Acme products.
Anyway, the way this works is that at this point, Bugs and Daffy go into space to try and stop the Blue Monkey from being launched, whereas Frasier and Elfman stay at Acme HQ and, I guess, try and save Dalton.
And we, since we're back in space, Marvin the Martian shows back up, and we have a... Frankly, this bit is the most Looney Tunes-ish bit to me, because you have two vaguely hero-ish characters fighting a villain in a Looney Tunes cartoon fight.
Oh yeah, Bugs and Marvin the Martian fight, and Bugs has a lightsaber for some reason.
Lightsaber carrot.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, had you been there at the time, that's a very Warner Brothers Looney Tunes bit. Like, it's very silly, it's over the top, it's kind of aged badly now, especially since 2003 was the third new George Lucas movie?
No, it was a year after Attack of the Clones.
Right. Well, I mean, Revenge of the Sith came out around like 2006, if I'm not
'05,
yeah.
But still, like, so Star Wars was back in the zeitgeist. I'll take it, right?
Right.
So that's what you got, you know.
Anyway, you can guess how this ends. The satellite doesn't work. Martin is turned into a monkey by the Blue Monkey. And Dalton proceeds to put handcuffs on said monkey.
Little monkey handcuffs.
Yeah, little monkey handcuffs.
He just had Handy on him.
And, I mean, that's basically the... Not quite the end.
This is the meta shit I was telling you about earlier.
Go ahead and do that.
So, Bugs Bunny... Okay, at this point, I kind of forgot Daffy was fired from Warner Brothers.
Right.
And, you know, Bugs was trying to, like, yo, come on, man. They love you. They said you're a favorite duck, blah, 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 blah. And then as the conclusion, I think this was just poor writing. They didn't know how to end the movie. Bugs was like, Daffy was like, come on, man. We got to be homebrews and things like that. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you hear a cut scene. Apparently, this entire thing was a movie, which... would make it, to your point, Daniel, if they didn't know each other or shit like that. And Brendan Fraser is actually there. Brendan Fraser's quote-unquote stunt double, which is the Brendan Fraser that we had throughout the movie, punches real Brendan Fraser for being a prick because he fires everybody and things like that. And
yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
A decade after Last Action Hero, they did Looney Tunes Last Action Hero.
Yeah, basically, this is... oh, boy. And then it ends with Porky Pig giving the classic... you know, that's all, folks, ending. And then at that point, I hope everyone was ashamed of themselves.
And then he does the whole, like, Ferris Bueller, go home. We're done.
What are you doing?
Like, why are you still here? Let's go home. This movie is weird.
Yeah, this movie definitely bombed. It didn't revitalize things. Thank God for basketball and LeBron James coming back to do Space Jam 2. Because, I don't know, I think the way they set up Space Jam 2, and it could be like a revitalization especially with HBO Max coming up. They might be a new series of Looney Tunes. You never know. Especially because they're getting the old voice. If I'm not mistaken, in Space Jam 2, they have the old voice actors back. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, but I'm, well, the old voice actors have long since departed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Billy West did Bugs Bunny, I think, for a while, didn't he?
He did. I think he still is now.
Yeah. So, who knows? Maybe Space Jam 2 can do what Looney Tunes Back in Action couldn't do. You know, they're going with the same formula, the first Space Jam movie, so,
yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Sure.
No final thoughts?
I didn't like it. It was cool. The only thing that was cool about this movie that I really liked was the cafeteria scene with Matthew Lillard and how it was kind of making fun of itself. Other than that, the plot was all over the place. The movie was just, I regretted watching it. Well, I had to end up renting it because the copy I had was just like digitally whatever. So I want my $2 back. Time is off.
First and foremost, Nora, this is free on Tubi. So you might get some ads, but you don't have to pay for it. Which is
I don't like ads. I'm that bougie.
Okay.
I play for Hulu.
Well, I mean, yeah, so do I. But man, this was just a bad idea. I mean, there's no reason for the Looney Tunes to be in it. It didn't endear me to the characters in any way. All of the performances were just way too over the top and inappropriate. There were too many characters. I mean, nothing about this movie was right. I mean, these characters are American icons, and this is like, I don't know, the equivalent of making a Muppet version of Debbie Does Dallas.
You know, this is like the first time me and you really agreed. Not a movie. Usually I'm gonna like the movie, but we're just like, fuck this movie. So
yeah.
Oh, this movie done great for both of us.
I mean, I felt this movie was sloppy. I thought it had jokes that I really liked. I don't think it's worth rewatching. Unfortunately, I think I have more nostalgia for Space Jam, but Space Jam also has a more like followable plot.
Space Jam made me care about the Looney Tunes.
Well, they're going to get destroyed by the Monstars.
I mean, fair, but we were also younger, and I think that matters more. If you were that age when this movie came out, you might like this movie more. The problem is this movie is like a Naked Gun kind of parody. There's just not a lot here. Like, there's no plot here, which is a shame, because it has better actors. It has to be more people I like in this. But yeah, I mean, either way, it's a mess. I'm going to watch the new LeBron one. I'm assuming everyone here will. It's going to be on HBO Max and in theaters. I'm probably going to see it on HBO Max because I already paid for that. I don't need to see something else in theaters. But we'll see. I don't know. I don't hate the Looney Tunes. The problem is all the stuff of theirs that I like was in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So they better do something to revive that brand because even Space Jam is just fine. It's not something I'm in love with or I don't think it's like high art.
They did revive the brand by that point in the 90s, and it was called Animaniacs, which is exactly what the old Looney Tunes were, and they just had a reboot of that on Hulu. Go watch that.
That's fine.
True.
That's fine. I mean, and you're right, like, and that is fine. That is functional. I like that zingness. Especially, it sucks to me because I like Disney as well, and there recently have been new Mickey Mouse and Goofy shorts that are quite funny. You'd think that some network, even if it was HBO Max, would do little 5, 6, 7 minute long Disney, like Bugs Bunny, Yosemite Sam shorts, because that's funny stuff. They just haven't figured it out yet, and that's a shame. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers needs to figure that stuff out, because I don't want to lose these characters to some nonsense, which it's really close to. And I mean, I grew up with Tiny Toon Adventures, but at least that was almost like a parody of what they used to be. Anyway, we're out of time. Enjoy it. We're in an era where we're all going to watch something streaming or live. So thank you. And I guess if you haven't heard it, listen to our Space Jam episode, which is now available to you on our main feed.
Hopefully the Quad City DJs come back for this new one. If they don't, it'll be a wasted opportunity.
Totally. Anyway, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we are covering Looney Tunes Back in Action, in honor to celebrate Space Jam. In our previous back catalog, we did Space Jam years ago. So if you want to listen to that, I'm re-releasing it this week as well. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we want to thank all of you for listening and subscribing. If you want extra content, feel free to join our Patreon, patreon.com/myopia. In the meantime, if you want to hear me riff this movie, we did it on Cineprov, patreon.com/cineprov. Thanks for all you do, guys. Thanks for sharing us. I don't know if you follow our Facebook group, but this week we were in the top 200 podcasts, and that's all thanks to you. So if you're interested, or you have someone else who likes movie and TV podcast, TV and film podcast, please send this to them, because we appreciate what you do. Thanks, guys.